Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Since 2007, Sherry DeBoer has been at the helm of the South Dakota Humanities Council as executive director. DeBoer has played a pivotal role in promoting reading and literature across the state. South Dakota has a festival of books and a center for the book because of Sherry DeBoer. Her leadership has also helped the organization gain greater financial stability. In June, she publicly announced her plans to retire. As her tenure comes to a close this month, the Humanities Council welcomes Anne Vollen as its new executive director. Vollen is former director of the Aylward Learning Center at Rockhurst University in Kansas City. She returns to Brookings, where she grew up and later attended South Dakota State, and they are both joining me inside the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls Studios today. Sherry DeBoer, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks, Lori. It's great to be here with you.
And Anne Vollen, welcome for the first time. It's nice to see you.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Sherry, let's start with you, because executive director in 2007, but really it goes back to your very first, data entry job in the 80s.
You have a good memory, Lori Walsh. Yes, it does. And that is how I started. It's supposed to be 2 days a week, and all of a sudden it was 4 days a week, and all of a sudden it was as much as I needed or wanted.
And then it was more.
But I had a great opportunity to work with Mary Wagner, who was in the legislature at that time. When she went to legislature, I was able to kind of step into a new role of grants management there, and it just kind of all went up from there. We had a reading series that we read across the world in, and all of those great things were happening and kind of all led up to when we had a new director, an executive director that really wanted to focus on a center for the book. We were about the 47th state in the nation to become a designated Center for the Book from the Library of Congress. And immediately you had a credibility among funders, especially for grants. But also it really showed everyone that you were steeped in literature in the right place. So anyway, that quickly followed with the development of the Festival of Books through a Center for the Book Advisory Council, through our board of directors and other staff members we had. So I don't want to ever have anyone think that it's me only in this. There were so many people along that journey, and especially people like Cheryl Balloon, who I want to recognize, and Becky Shank were the first co-advisors of that group. And we had everybody across the state that really had a vested interest in literature and reading and literacy. And we had professors from our academic institutions, we had publishers, we had the board people, we had Native Americans that were poets and writers. It was a really great group of about 30 people. We had Bernie Hunhoff as a publisher of the South Dakota Magazine. It was a great think tank to really get the festival started in 2003. We were crazy with 120 authors and with a venue lineup that stretched from the Hampton Inn all the way down to the Armory, the Pavilion. It was crazy, but it was fun.
Right. That first year when you have a festival of books, did you think, yeah, we got this? Or did you think, oh my dear goodness, what have we done?
I think we thought this was so absolutely exciting for the really great things that happened. We had Leif Inger as our One Book South Dakota and Annie Prue as a Pulitzer Prize winner as our keynote for Saturday night. And we had 600 people in the room. And that's probably as thrilling as it possibly can get to be involved with that kind of an event. And right after that, we all went out to Boot Hill up to the cemetery. And we had storytelling by the Black Hills Storytellers that approached us and said, you know, you really need to use us. And we're really good and we've been together for a long time. How about we do stories at Mount Moriah? And we said, great. And so we were met by volunteers that had blankets and hot chocolate. Leif Inger and his wife and their two boys. He was just at the festival this year, and he talked with me about those boys are in college now and graduating from college, but they were homeschooling their children so they could bring them along. That was their favorite event, one of their favorite events in their life. But it was just great to do that. But the 120 authors and a co-director that, you know, might have shut off her cell phone kind of early in the game, and problems in Deadwood where they don't have aspirin for someone that has a toothache. an author that was, you know, really in misery.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things made us wonder, but I don't think we've ever looked back.
I remember one of the years when Dave Eggers came to town, and I was walking downtown and walking past the Holiday Inn, because I was on the way to the library, I think, after parking, and he was going for a jog. And it just made me stop. Oh my gosh, Dave Eggers is going for a jog in my city. So talk a little bit about Sioux Falls, Brookings, Deadwood, and the communities, and what is really meant to some of those connections and the community connections that have happened because of the festival being in those places.
Yes, I think that's one of the central parts of the festival. We've been asked a lot of times, why don't we have it at the convention center? Because it'd be a lot easier. A lot easier logistically and a lot easier for people to get around. But the heart of the festival, besides really emphasizing literature, is showcasing South Dakota authors, but really looking at that community that you're in. And where are the important places where people gather that have a cultural emphasis or culture at the heart? So we want to always be in the library. We want to be in the Orpheum Theater. Once it got restored, you know, I think we were in our second or third festival before that incredible restoration that had happened. When you have spaces like that and you bring, like, second graders to the Washington Pavilion. Many of them have not been in the Great Hall. All of those kinds of things, I think, really show everybody what the special identity of that community is, but that you're coming together in conversation to really see what your connections are and what you can learn from one another and what you can learn from the presenters. And, I mean, my exciting moment when Dave Eggers was here was, besides him being so nice, you know, just absolutely so nice the minute we met, was walking down the street from the Holiday Inn to the Orpheum and just seeing people just streaming to the Orpheum. Yeah. And of all ages, 20-year-olds, college students, 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, men, women, children. It was just wonderful. And we had the Egyptian student delegation here from Big Reed from 2 years before. And it was so exciting for them to meet him and talk with him. And we brought in not only Dave Eggers, but the central character of his book, What is the What? Valentino Akchang Dang. And he was from Sudan, and it was his story that Dave Eggers was telling. And to have them meet him, and then to meet Dan O'Brien at Zambro's the next, later on that afternoon, was just incredible. And for him to talk about Buffalo for the Broken Heart. But we made it possible for them to go out to West River, and that's a long story. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. I'm sorry, Lori. Bring me back in. It's okay.
So many stories, and we could talk about Dave Eggers that night, his public presentation, and some of these memories that people have of those connections. But I do want to bring Anne into the conversation and say this is a homecoming for you because you are a hometown kid coming back into Brookings to take over the leadership of the South Dakota Humanities Council. Tell me what this moment, just in the sense of coming back to South Dakota and sort of stepping into that water, feels like again.
It feels really good. It's a surprise that, you know, this is happening and that, you know, something worked out like this. And, you know, it's just a real gift that I'm happy to be part of. As I'm listening to Sherry tell these stories, it's like, wow, you know, to have the chance to be here and be part of an organization that has created such wonderful moments for the people of its state and to hopefully do as much as I can to preserve that heritage that she's giving to us and to take it to the next steps, too. Again, it's just a gift that I didn't see coming, so I'm glad to be here. Being back in South Dakota is very familiar, and it's a little bit of a new place to be again because it's been a few decades since I've lived here.
Right, and the travel that you will do across crisscrossing the state for board meetings and festivals and events, what are you sort of looking forward to? I won't say the most because I'm sure there's a lot, but what are some of the things that you're just really anticipating?
Oddly enough, I think I'm anticipating just those reactions of the people who get to use the services that the South Dakota Humanities Council has set up for them. It'll be wonderful to see how something works in Lemon and to hear how things impacted people in Aberdeen, or to hear about how somebody from White South Dakota was able to come in and listen to their favorite author and didn't think that they were going to have that chance. So being able to put things together and realize that they could have impacts on people that we don't know ahead of time are going to be benefiting from it is what I think I look forward to as much as anything.
Yeah, and you've had that experience with people in restaurants who have come up and told you about the festival, you know, servers and cooks and people at gas stations, and the reach of humanity's conversations. And some of those conversations are difficult to have. You've had talk a little bit about some of the tough stuff that really sort of exemplifies a meaningful humanities conversation that the Humanities Council sort of helped facilitate.
Yes, I think the history of the tough topics really goes back to the very beginning and creation of the South Dakota Humanities Council in 1972. Jack Markin was a department head of the English department at that time and worked with NEH to write the big, huge proposals that meant that South Dakota eventually became the South Dakota Committee on the Humanities. But he had a special interest and special knowledge about the very important indigenous history of our state. And so from the very beginning, that has been embedded in our mission, that we make sure that we're being culturally appropriate, but we're telling the cultural stories that are the most important stories to tell. So we've always made sure that we had a certain number of American Indians as authors at our Festival of Books, and we've always had tribal members on our board of directors, and I think that has sometimes left to some really tough things that have happened. And there may have been a time or two where we were lampooned in a newspaper about not including certain people in the festival. And those decisions are always hard, but we've always had a core group of people that are Native that we can go to, and you go with those decisions, but you just always are thinking about what are the books that can help tell those stories, at least when we're doing the book festival, or what are the other kinds of programs when we ran the Race and Civility Initiative a few years ago and really looked at what's going on with racism and how can we address those events that have happened in Rapid City lately that have been really tough. And we put out grants of, I think, $50,000 that year. Mm. To address that issue. And this year we were talking about informing the news, which I don't think we've ever gotten quite as tuned in to the current news situation, but the whole idea of fake news, and we brought in our one book author informing the news, but we closed the festival with a Saturday night keynote where we looked at very specifically with two Pulitzer Prize winners, one a woman from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, who told the story of two men in the Heartland. The name of the series was AIDS in the Heartland, and she followed their story as they were dying. And she watched those subscriptions to the St. Paul Pioneer Press go down, I think. I can't remember. We've got Ryan Woodard here in the studio with us that was at the festival, too. Do you remember what percentage? And wasn't it like, I know it was double digits, and I feel like it was at least half of their subscriptions went down. And then we were talking with Timothy Egan also, who had been one of 10 writers at the New York Times that won for a series on race in America in 2001. And so what they were asked to do was really talk about those issues when you reported it, when you won the Pulitzer, and then what would that look like today if you were reporting that stories? And it was quite astonishing. Both of them said that one of the biggest things was they weren't even sure if they could have told the story about that individual, that personal story, because there would have been so much backlash in social media.
And this is the humanities, and in the sense that we take on and have conversations about things that are not always easy. Talk a little bit about gaining support from South Dakotans, because this is also, you know, you mentioned grants that go out, but also people, you know, support the Humanities Council through donations and philanthropy. Let's talk about that a little bit and what the climate for that is in the state.
One thing I've learned, and this is now my 10th day on the job, is that I have a lot to learn, a lot that I don't know yet about, even though I may have come in with ideas and things I thought, oh, you know, this is going to work, let me give this a try. I have to spend time making sure that I understand and listen to and continue to always have respect for the people in the community. And with that, I think, in the forefront of what we do and what we move forward with, we'll be okay. But I think there will always be something that people don't want to hear, and this is a time when I think it's fair to say that culturally in the United States we're saying that people are being tribal, that they are having their own group and not looking at what other people are doing and are ready to attack and feel like they are being attacked. And so, again, being mindful of the idea that I just have to be respectful for everyone who's there. Some people are going to be open to and ready to listen to stories. When they are personified by people that they know, or when they are, when you listen to them in a group, like in a book club, and you have a chance to discuss things and bring up your idea and hear what somebody else has to say, you get in touch with how something impacts someone else. And therefore, the humanities can do that by, I think, having those discussions from the ground up, if nothing else, and moving forward that way. It's always difficult. And like I said, in this climate, it maybe is a little more difficult than in past times. But I do think that there's a lot of people who are ready to and willing to listen to the many different ideas that are part of our culture right now. And I think there's many ways that humanities can do that, and certainly reading and being part of the literary stories that are telling not only our stories in South Dakota, but the stories that are a little bit larger that are coming back home to us is a way that we can help with that.
What have books meant to you? Because both of you have some pretty cool stories about being kids and being readers. So, Anne, tell me a little bit about growing up surrounded by books and how that has changed who you are as an adult today.
You always wonder, how would I have been different if, you know, this hadn't happened in my life or that one hadn't happened in my life? You know, and it's hard to parse that back and figure out how that could have happened. I grew up in a household where I just remember always being around books. And I don't remember when I first began reading, but I went to a country school, one-room country school. And one of the benefits of being in that type of situation was you got to do your work and you got to do your lessons. Then you kind of listened in on what was going on with other people and their lessons. Mm-hmm. And when you were, you could also just go in and be in the library and pick up a book and read it. And I just thought that was the nicest thing in the world. I can still remember reading Make Way for Ducklings in the library in our country school. When the country schools consolidated in Brookings, which was the county I grew up in, my dad went to a lot of the auctions, and he would bring home boxes of textbooks. Mm. And we would read those. And there was a lot of literary books that were part of those. And I just remember sitting at home at night, and, you know, we were playing a game, or we were doing some coloring, or we were reading. My mom would finish whatever she was doing in the kitchen. She'd come and sit down on the sofa, and she'd have a newspaper or some farm magazine, and she'd start laughing about something, and we'd go sit next to her, and we'd cuddle up, and we'd want to hear, and we'd want to know what was going on that was so funny that she was interested in that made her laugh. We also didn't have a TV for many years. We didn't have a TV until I was 12 years old. And I think that was a tremendous bonus for my ability to just be so engaged with books and like being around them. Reading was just always easy for me, and writing was always easy for me. And having been so embedded with it so early meant that it was very hard to pull that back and, you know, not have that be part of my life going forward. It just gives me as much enjoyment and pleasure as any other activity. And the next thing you know, here I am studying English and being part of a literary group and working with the humanities. So
the literary group just got bigger.
I love that. That's
now it's the state of South Dakota and beyond. So let's talk, before we run out of time, about the announcement and so how people can meet Anne and the announcement of the 2019 South Dakota One Book, because people can come see this in person.
Yes, sure. We're so excited to announce that everyone in the area can come and meet Anne next Tuesday, December 18th, at our offices in Brookings at 1215 Trail Ridge Road, Suite A. We're right across from the Sunflower Spa and Hair Place. And from 3 to 6, we'll have goodies and punch, I hope, and coffee and water. And then at 5:15, we're going to announce the One Book South Dakota for 2019, along with the Young Readers 2019 selection, too, that just might be a bind-in of three books and might just be published by the state South Dakota State Historical Society. We've been talking about that across the state for a lot, long time all summer, actually. So we can't quite call that an announcement, but the other one is, and we will live stream that on Facebook. So we really encourage people to come to the office so that they can meet Ann in person and have some holiday cheer with all the staff that will be there, but also at 5:15 to tune in for that announcement.
What will you miss?
What will I miss? Well, the people, of course. People that I work with, the staff, the board, the committees, the festival authors, people like you, Lori, all of our partners. I just can't say that I've met very many people that I won't miss.
As we talk with people who have things to say about you and tell their stories of you, one of the things that came up as a theme again and again is how you have given other people confidence to do the thing that they wanted to do next. And so I say personally to you, thank you, because as a young writer, freelance author, you gave me so many interviews with people like Ted Kooser and Marilyn Robinson, and just trusted, and Kate DiCamillo, and trusted that I would not embarrass the state of South Dakota.
You were always wonderful.
And I always say that I'm here in this position today because of you, because you told me it was okay to ask questions and to do that. So thank you for everything that you've done for the state and for me personally. You will be missed.
Well, you're welcome. I will miss you, and your curiosity will always be an inspiration to me, Lori.
Ann Vollen, welcome. I look forward to getting to know you very well and having all these stories of mayhem, behind-the-scenes stuff to share with you in the future.
Yeah, let's just see what happens in a year.
State of South Dakota is lucky to welcome you, so thank you both for being here with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity, Lori.